Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to Bulls Beat Bulls fans. Doug Pilnes here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls, and Nico Mirotic is finally traded. We've known it's been coming for a while. We know the Bulls have been looking for a first-round pick. They were able to find it from the New Orleans Pelicans. We did have to take Omer Sheikh's contract back as part of this trade. Initially, I wasn't really happy with that. I thought, we're taking so much money back that this isn't, you know, as great a deal. But after learning Sheikh's final year is only $3 million guaranteed, now I think the deal is a little bit much better value-wise than I thought. I think the draft pick the Bulls got is probably pretty good. Talk a little bit about that later. But Nico is gone, and now the Bulls, I think, are in full-on tank mode. Rumors are that they're still very active in the trade market. I think that probably means Robin Lopez. I don't think there's much demand for Justin Holiday, even though a lot of Bulls fans seem to think that we can move Holiday. I'm sure we could move him, but I don't think we'll get anything back for him. And I don't know if management is going to be on the we'll just trade Justin Holiday to get absolutely nothing just for the heck of it bandwagon. I think they do have to be a little careful. You don't want to make the cupboard so bare and so much about just these young guys next year that you can't do anything. That said, we did just pick up Holiday this year, so you can probably find another Holiday next year. So probably not too big a deal. If you can move him and get a second-round pick, maybe you do that. I did think it was interesting. Article kind of came out, and it was discussing how the Bulls don't value second-round picks. They just view them as, like, non-existent. Like, they just don't care. If someone wants a second-round pick to sweeten a deal, they'll throw one in. And I think that's interesting only because the Bulls have done pretty well with their second-round picks in the very few they've used. Now, it's been a while, but they got Omer Sheikh, Aaron Gray, and Chris Duhon. So I guess all of those are a while back now, who went on to get second contracts and, you know, had decent careers in the second round. The other guys that have missed on, James Curry, Eric Murphy, Cameron Bairstow, and probably Paul Zipser. Zipser's a little up for the bait. These guys are all basically drafted 49 and later. So when I look at the Bulls picks coming up, like this draft and the next draft possibly, where they're maybe going to be picking in the top in the 30s of the second round, I think those picks actually have a little value and the Bulls should be a little more careful about getting rid of them. That said, for the most part, they've not had great first-round selections because they've been a playoff team almost every year in the Garpax era. So they're pretty much, you know, like 46 and worse for every single one of their picks. So I think at that point, it really is worth saying, yeah, I don't care about these picks. They really just don't matter. So the final deal ends up with Tony Allen and Jameer Nelson coming to Chicago, both players possibly being waived. Allen, it looks like for sure, will be waived. Jameer Nelson may or may not be waived, especially with Chris Dunn out. We don't have a lot at point guard. I think it's kind of interesting because, you know, I'd just say, well, just waive Nelson. I mean, who cares if we don't have a lot at point guard? You're not trying to win now. I mean, Jameer Nelson, clearly not part of any kind of future. If you could maybe flip Jameer Nelson to a team that needs a point guard and maybe will give you a second rounder, why not? And even if they don't give you a second rounder, they just give you a trade exception or something. I mean, even a, you know, heck, a 2019 second rounder, just anything. Anything that maybe smooths out another deal later, you know, helps you. Even if you don't value the second rounder, if you need to throw someone a second rounder for something, why not? Or if you can trade him for just cash, you know, you basically give them Jameer Nelson and they give you like $1 million. Why not? You know, I don't think there's any real value of having Nelson on the roster. It is a little bit interesting only because you probably don't want Lowry developing without any type of point guard next to him. So having a guy like Nelson who's pretty solid, it might actually add some wins, which I think is pretty bad. But having a guy who can help, you know, put your team into some offensive flow so that these guys can actually get good reps, I think there is some value in that. So anyway, we'll see what happens there. I don't expect Nelson to stick for any long period of time. Maybe they just keep him until Chris Dunn comes back from the concussion. I think it'll depend when the waiver deadline is for him to sign with a playoff team. I'm not sure off the top of my head when that is, but I would assume the Bulls will waive him before that so he can catch on with somewhere else if they do not flip him at the trade deadline. So we'll see what happens with the Bulls and if more activity in the trade deadline means we'll actually get something interesting. I don't think the Bulls are going to get another first-round pick. These seem very difficult to come by. I don't think Robin Lopez is going to generate first-round interest from anyone. There are some teams that could definitely use his services, but a lot of those teams don't have the right types of salaries, other things to match to really ultimately make the trade make sense. And I think that's going to be part of the tricky part of this scenario. There's teams who would maybe want to add them and maybe need to subtract someone, but the overall math just doesn't really work out. So we'll see how things go there. Now back to the Pelicans, as I noted, I think right now, I want to say their pick is 17, 18. They're kind of right in that range. There's a lot of teams clumped up there in the playoffs. if the Pelicans get worse, I mean, DeMarcus Cousins with the Achilles rupture out for the rest of the year, I think actually Nico makes him better than Cousins. I'm not a big believer in Cousins. I don't think he's that great of a player. I think he's a good scorer. I don't think he tries on defense. Don't think he really fits that well with Anthony Davis either. I think Mirotić actually probably maybe improves that team just going there. Obviously, losing a Sheik doesn't do anything. It will be interesting because I think Jameer Nelson helps him a little bit. Maybe that was just because he played really well against us when we played the Pelicans, and that's, you know, my entire view. So obviously he's not been a big player for them so far. But I think Mirotić actually probably makes them better than they were without him. And so I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch and see how things shape up with the Pelicans the rest of the season. Are they going to do better? And now their pick is going to maybe move back down to, say, 20 because they climb in the standings a little bit, mostly over the Eastern Conference teams in terms of the lotto projection. Obviously, it's not such a big thing for the playoffs, but mostly over those Eastern Conference teams for lotto projections. And they could potentially maybe fall like one or two slots. I don't think they can fall out of the playoffs. If you look at the West, really there's no one else to compete. You know, the teams in ninth right now is the Clippers, who are 25-25. After they traded Blake Griffin, they're clearly not looking to make the playoffs. They're also probably going to start trying to get worse and do their own little mini tank. Now, the Clippers waited too long to really tank anything. They're going to have a hard time, you know, moving into any really good picks, but they're clearly not going to climb the standings. And the Pelicans, about five games over, they are in pretty good shape here. They could maybe slide down to the last of the playoff teams, which would give the Bulls the 15th pick. So I'd say this pick is probably going to land between 15 and 20. It's not really an amazing range, but, you know, I think it's still pretty decent value given that we weren't going to sign Nico. And I think a few things that came out of this that were interesting was that it was very clear that Nico didn't want to stay with the Bulls. You know, Paxson said, you know, he never wavered from his trade request. He was a very good professional. He stayed, you know, with the team, did everything he needed to do. He played really well. You know, everything was great in the locker room, but he never wavered from that desire to play elsewhere. And the deal was hung up a little bit on whether or not the Pelicans would pick up Nico's option. He did not want to go there without the option being picked up. He would lose his bird rights. I don't really know if he wanted to go there even with the option picked up or if he just wanted to go somewhere better. I'm not sure. I think this is actually a great opportunity for him to go to that team. Clearly, they're probably going to make the playoffs, and he can be a big part of their offense, a bigger role than he was playing in Chicago. I thought it was odd he didn't want to pick up. He wouldn't want to be traded without his option being picked up, because I'm looking at next year's free agents, and I'm thinking Nico might be the second best free agent available. I mean, Paul George is probably number one, but Paul George, I think there's a really good chance he's just going to stay with the Thunder, because when I look at his options, they're not great. There's no good teams with cap space. All teams with cap space are pretty lousy. And so Paul George would probably say, yep, Thunder is better than anywhere else I can go. I'm going to hang here. DeMarcus Cousins, maybe the next best guy who's available. And Chris Paul, but I think we expect him to just stay with Houston. DeMarcus Cousins, next best guy, he also probably can't do better than staying with the Pelicans. Now, it'll be interesting if the Pelicans really want to pay up on Cousins. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm probably not so excited about that. I'm not a huge fan of DeMarcus Cousins, as obviously I noted earlier. But he may also stay because his scenario isn't any better anywhere else either, because there's still no good rooms with cap space. And now Nico would probably be maybe my pick for the next best guy available, who would be like truly available to go anywhere. And I don't know that that means he'd get a max contract, but I think he'd get over $20 million a year and get to pick his team. Now, he'd be picking a bunch of lousy teams to go to, but I think he would have gotten over $20 million on the free agent market if he did not opt into this and the Pelicans didn't pick up his option. So I think that was a mistake on his part. From the Pelicans' part, I don't know why they were grousing about picking up the option. For the exact opposite reason. I mean, Nico is going to get way more money than this on the open market. He's playing at a level that's way above what his salary is right now. I would think you'd want to lock into this guy for another year at $12.5 million. I mean, that's a pretty good deal for you, in my opinion. So it's interesting that they kind of didn't want to do that initially, and the trade got held up for a little bit. So I thought that was kind of just an interesting thing. But like I said on Twitter, right when the deal was initially reported and then ultimately rejected, I said this deal is going to get done. It makes sense for Nico to be traded and not waive his no trade clause and just let the trade go through. And it also made sense for the Pelicans to pick up the option. One of these two people or in this proposition is going to fold because it makes sense for both of them. So one of them will eventually come to their senses. And so it turns out it was the Pelicans that came to their senses. I think they were also worried a little bit about the luxury tax. They were right on the threshold. They had to give up Allen and Nelson to squeeze under the tax. I think they were trying to figure out who they really wanted to give up and whether this was going to hurt them and things like that. So I think that was another component that maybe took a couple extra days to figure out. The Bulls obviously did not play Nico. While they knew this was really close to going down, he sat out that Portland game. We got kind of a glimpse of what the Bulls might be like for the next couple games without Nico and without Chris Dunn. And Lowry was out for personal reasons. Might have been out on the net what they were. I didn't actually pick up on it, but he was out for personal reasons. Presumably he'll be back. So we'll see how things go. But man, was that game ugly. And it was funny because the Bulls announcers were talking about how they won the last three quarters. I'm like, yes, when Portland stopped trying and they benched like their good players for the entire fourth. And, you know, they were up by 20 to 30 points the whole way. The Bulls managed to win the last three quarters. Like, what difference does it make? They're down 23 to 2 when the game mattered. Zach LaVine had a really nice game, except that he didn't do anything when there was actually a game. Yeah, he was fine when throwing in some points and scoring when the Bulls were down by 20, but there's like really no impact. I mean, it's still nice to see him play well because he's played so badly so far. And this is kind of what I expected, as I mentioned over the last couple of podcasts. I expected him to have some rust, to not play well. He does look pretty smooth out there athletically. He does look like he's getting his shots off. Just looks like they're not falling. And so we'll have to see. It was nice to see some of those fall when the Bulls played Portland, but we'll see if that carries over to a game that really matters and minutes that really matter, because I think that's a little bit of a different thing. Lowry will obviously be back as well, you know, soon, and that will then give the Bulls a little bit more. So now the next week has got a couple of key games in it, because you've got this Clippers game coming up. Now the Clippers aren't a team that's competing for you in terms of losses. I don't think we're going to be able to win so many games that we finish ahead of the Clippers, but they are a team after trading Blake Griffin that went from like a decent team where you'd expect this version of the Bulls to lose handily to a team that's now maybe similar in talent, and this will be maybe a game. Now I think without Dunn and with Nico gone, I think the Bulls probably still drop this game to the Clippers, but it's now could go either way, and that's kind of tough. You'd have loved to have played them one last time while they still had Griffin, because at this point you have to be all in on the tank. You know, I know Fred and I were both pretty excited in the Big Red Bus about the team making actually a push for the playoffs. The Dunn injury pretty much ended that straight away. And, you know, now the trade of Nico completely ends that. So the Bulls are well out. And, it, you know, they're clearly back in the draft pick ranks right now. In the win column, they're presently tied for fifth. Now, a couple of teams have got more losses than the Bulls. So the Bulls, I think right now, would be seventh, if I'm not mistaken, without looking it up. With their pick, but in the win column, they're still tied with fifth, two games out from the teams that are sitting at third and fourth, and three games for teams that are sitting at first and second. So they're still right in the mix of being really bad, and I think if they move Robin Lopez, they could be there. I mean, they could really be really bad. If you move Lopez and Holiday, I think you're there for sure. So we'll see how that shakes out if the Bulls make moves just to try and guarantee they get back into that top four type of range. And if you do, you just have to hope that no one jumps you in the lottery. And obviously, you hope you win the lottery yourself. But the second thing you hope for is you don't have a team sitting 7th, 8th, etc., jump ahead of you. Because if you're 4th in the standings and you end up picking 4th, I think that's fine. You know, you could live with that. There's probably at least 4 or 5 really good players is how it feels right now. So you'd be okay with that. But you don't want to end up picking 6th or something like that. So we'll see what happens. Presently, I guess anything is better than where they were just a few days ago. We're starting to think like we're a 10th, 11th. It now does look like the Bulls will probably be somewhere in that, we'll say, 3-8 range, I think is probably their range. Brooklyn is clearly not going to be worse than them. Brooklyn has no incentive. They don't own their pick, so they should be better. They're a team that's right on the cusp with the Bulls. Lakers, a couple wins ahead of the Bulls. I think they're also maybe trying to win more and not trying to be in the lotto because they don't have their pick. So I think they're also a team that is going to stay ahead of the Bulls. So they don't really have that much downside to fall. I think probably was seventh is like the worst realistic. A few of the teams now are kind of going into full-on tank mode. So you're not going to see those win totals climb as much as the previous percentages of those teams were. And I think if the Grizzlies trade Marc Gasol, you could definitely see them just completely falling off. And it'd be tough to catch up with them at that point. After this Clippers game, the Bulls play the Kings. That's one of the teams that's actually worse than them in the wins column. So if you drop that game, it definitely helps you because it gives that team up to 17 wins and you stay at 18. So, you know, but the Kings, I'm sure, are aware of that too. And the Kings have more or less openly announced they're tanking. So we'll have to see how that goes. I do think without Dunn and without Nico, though, that the Bulls right now are a really, really terrible team. If LaVine has an off night, this team has no offense whatsoever. LaVine is just chucking shots left and right. I mean, he's really going to town. And I think it'll be interesting. I can't remember if I talked about it much last podcast. I think I did, though. What do the Bulls do with Zach LaVine? I think they've gotten enough value in terms of Dunn and Lowry out of this trade with Butler that they don't necessarily need to keep LaVine. And I think it's going to be a really dicey call what you do with him if he continues to play at this level, because now you're stuck. You pay this guy a ton of money. And I did a little bit of math, so you can bear with me while I get a little nerdy on you. LaVine's qualifying offer is $4.4 million. The most he can sign with for another team is going to be 25% of the cap after the qualifying offer. So if the cap is going to be around $100 million, I think it's like $102 million. I figure, you know, once you scale with raises and stuff like that, I didn't work it out exactly, probably averages about $27 million a year. You add that $4 million on from the qualifying offer, and you divide that by five, and it comes out to about $22.5 million a year is the most LaVine can make over the next 5 years if he signs with another team and takes the Bulls qualifying offer. So from that perspective, if you're the Bulls, the absolute maximum you can pay LaVine is that $22.5 million, because at this point, he has no upside over that, right? Like, he has no way to make more than that over the same period of time, and because he's playing bad, and because he tore his ACL, and because he's really not proven that he's that good of a player to deserve that type of contract anyway, outside of maybe a short stretch last year prior to tearing the ACL, you definitely don't have to pay him more than that. He would be taking all this risk if he plays bad in the qualifying offer, and if the Bulls have him on the QO, he's certainly almost not going to stay. No one takes the qualifying offer and stays with their team. It's only happened once. It was Spencer Hawes, and he signed a minor deal after taking the qualifying offer. So it's basically unheard of for a guy to sign a major contract with the team after making him go through the qualifying offer. So the Bulls won't be incentivized to play this guy as much or to develop him or do anything if he's on the QO. So now if you're LaVine, that's a huge risk, huge, huge risk to be on the QO. So clearly you need some upside to take this risk. So the Bulls should not pay him more than the $22.5 million, which is his maximum he can get if he does the qualifying offer. That should be the absolute ceiling that they should offer this guy. And to me, I think they should force a discount at that level. So if you want to go 5 years, $20 million a year, I think that is, it's like a 10% haircut for LaVine over what he could maximally get. And the amount of risk he would be taking going for that is so huge, it would be nuts, in my opinion, not to take the $100 million. I'm sure there might be some pride thing, his agent might posture, but in the end, it makes no sense for him to try and take the qualifying offer in order to secure like an extra $12 million. It just makes no sense. Now, if he plays really badly on the qualifying offer, he could easily become like a four-year, you know, $40 million type guy instead. And at that level, you know, you're now losing $60 million versus trying to gain $12 million. I mean, it may be even worse if he has another injury or something else. So you think about this guy hasn't made so much money in his life that he's set for life yet. Even at like 5 years, $80 million, that's enough where you're completely set for life. You've got some real risk going on. I think that's actually the deal, $580 million. That splits the difference between LaVine's upside and the risk that you have signing him. And given the risk LaVine has on his end, guarantees him generational wealth without, you know, taking on that risk. So I think that's maybe where things should go. I think the agents will always push for more than that, and it'll be contentious if the Bulls fight for that. But if I'm LaVine, I would end up taking that deal just because it's a lot of risk to take the qualifying offer when you've not made all this money and to give up this massive amount of guaranteed money. Maybe you can push it a little higher, but I, like I said, your max upside is only around like $112 million if you take the qualifying offer. So you really start thinking like, how much do I really want to fight through this thing to get just that shade of extra money? And I think ultimately it is not so much. So we'll have to wait to see what happens with the team. Hopefully Chris Dunn will be back after the All-Star break. You know, I guess in some ways at this point, I'm almost like, take your time, Chris Dunn. But I think Chris Dunn needs some time to develop. I mean, he's still a young player. He needs to get minutes out there. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad if he missed a few games, but I think he'll come back after the All-Star break when his symptoms will probably have lessened by then. I don't think there's much incentive to play him before the All-Star break, so we'll see what happens there. I think the Bulls will definitely be much better with Dunn back. I do think if LaVine can get on a hot streak, he will kind of cancel out a little bit of the trade of Mirotić. But if he continues to play largely how he has so far, I think it'll be dicey. One thing I think is kind of interesting, I've been really happy watching Denzel Valentine play. I think he's really played pretty well. His play, in my opinion, has been much better than I expected. I think he's kind of become a player. I do think it would be interesting to see if the Bulls would be willing to trade him if they could get something back. He's still a young guy, got a couple more years on his rookie deal. Looks really good. I think some other teams might be interested in him, but he might be a guy you'd be willing to trade. I would actually also be completely willing to flip Zach LaVine somewhere else if someone was interested in pulling on his deal and not having to deal with whatever drama is going to happen with him in free agency this summer. But I think because of that situation, you wouldn't get much back for him, and so you're probably better off just waiting and figuring how things work out. It's also interesting with the Bulls taking on Ashik this year. We were going to have cap room this offseason. Taking on Ashik's extra deal over Mirotić's extra deal is definitely going to close down the amount of cap room the Bulls have. And I think that's okay because I think it's a lousy free agent year. So the Bulls basically, by taking on this salary, said, yeah, we're just going to sit out this free agent year in terms of making major moves. And I think that's probably a good decision because it's lousy, lousy people available. And you just end up overpaying guys you don't want. So I think that's probably not such a big deal. We did see Felicio on the court a few times recently. And I'm wondering if that is part of, hey, Robin Lopez maybe is going to go next. We just got to start getting a look at Felicio and having him out there. It would be interesting to me if we traded Lopez to see if Felicio kind of gets back a little bit to where he was last year, where he wasn't like so abysmally bad. I mean, he's definitely had things to work on and stuff he had to do. But right now it's hard because he can't make any mistakes. He's looking over his shoulder. His confidence is clearly way down. Maybe he just got lazy when he got paid. That's always a possibility with any guy. But I do kind of wonder if Lopez is traded and Felicio gets consistent minutes, if maybe there's some hope of getting this guy back into a somewhat serviceable big man who can play some minutes for you. Because I think that would be pretty big for the Bulls going forward if his contract doesn't become complete dead space, but is something that they are able to use. So I think that wraps it up for this edition of the Bulls Beat. We'll definitely be looking over next week to see what the Bulls do against some of these games you're hoping that they lose against other competition. We'll be looking at the trade deadline, see if anything happens with Chicago, if any other additional moves happen. But I think so far you're probably pretty happy if you're a Bulls fan. Secured that extra pick, probably lowered your draft position from maybe 8 to 5 with trading Nico and getting out of that deal. So I think that's also really big value. And a pretty good week, I think, for Chicago if you're a Bulls fan. Might not be so watchable the rest of the year, but I think we can take that if we get the right player in the draft. Anyway, talk to you guys next week.